Good morning. Today is Thursday, September the 2nd. Joining us this morning from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department, Ryan Derby. He's in charge of all emergencies. Well, okay, maybe notification of no emergencies. A little bit closer to that being accurate?
That's about right. I run the Office of Emergency Services.
Yeah, well, we try to get somewhat close occasionally here. Are you ready for your question, sir?
I'm ready.
All righty. Let's see if we can... you know what? I'm not even going to try to get anything military-esque. That's a weird one. We're not going to talk about toads today. All right. Blue. Why does blue mean obscene, as in blue movies?
I have no idea.
Neither do I. Oh. It's a French word. Never mind. That one doesn't count.
Question number two.
Yes, yes. We'll go on to one that at least we have a chance... All right. Why are the size of nails measured in pennies?
Why? See, I'm going to deflect it back to you.
I noticed. Okay, so you've played with the press a little bit. That's fair. Nails in England were once sold by the hundreds. Nails that were sold for 10 pence per hundred were known as 10-penny nails. Larger nails that sold for 20 pence were called 20-penny nails, and so on. Though the pricing has long since changed, we still use the penny designation to specify the size of the nail.
All right. Tuck that away into the pocket of knowledge that
yes.
I'll never use again.
Those confusing English. Yeah, but I bet you next time you're at the hardware store.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you might at least go, yeah, okay, there's a reason why. I may not know why, but there's a reason why. So how busy are you guys in Eastern Humboldt right now?
It's been pretty busy since late afternoon, early evening, Sunday on the 29th. We've had crews out there nonstop. Sunday was the 29th.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly what I was confirming to.
My days are kind of blurred.
Our September calendar came in early this year.
but it's been really busy. There's been fire crews, law enforcement out there, 24, not quite 7 yet, but for 24 hours every day, fighting the fire, maintaining the roadblocks, and trying to keep people safe.
Was that a lightning fire, or was that somebody stupid?
At this time, I'm not sure what the exact cause of the fire is. I believe it's under investigation.
One of the things that I find most disturbing, I guess, fires, we heard a little bit about it this morning with the flooding in New York, the hurricane in Louisiana, the looting. Yeah, okay, wait a minute. Somebody just got stomped. They lost pretty much everything they've got, and now there is a segment of society that perceives that as an opportunity for them to benefit from it. That just is so goofy. How do you process that and not do press releases like I would?
Well, I mean, we're fortunate in Humboldt County, particularly in some of the smaller pockets. We have a really good community mindset. And what we've seen, especially with the Knob Fire, is that the community is really rallying behind each other and supporting each other, neighbors helping neighbors. Really all that we've seen that has been even an inconvenience was people trying to access private roads to get in and defend their properties, justifiably.
Okay, now that one makes sense. Yeah,
But the looting, we haven't witnessed that in this incident. It's largely been positive. We've got good people in Humboldt County.
It's those darn tourists. Sorry. So how do you just kind of cruise the neighborhoods, and if you see somebody, they really stand out, so you ask if they can either be if they can be of assistance, or hey, you're not supposed to be here. You know, we can't have people running around as we're trying to defend fire lines and keep people out.
It's typically the latter. So we have sheriff's deputies out there right now, both night and day shift. CHP's out there staffing roadblocks as well, in addition to multiple fire service agencies. So generally speaking, if you're not there in a uniform and you're not attached to the incident, then you shouldn't be there in the evacuation order zones. Now, there certainly are people that haven't left their property, and we don't force them to leave, but once they do leave, we prevent them from re-entering.
Oh, so it's like a one-way door.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to leave, though.
I would say...
Do they register?
So
you would know where they are if things suddenly made a significant change. You know where the people are that you have to get out?
So generally speaking, when we issue out our notifications, we utilize the Humboldt Alert system first, and that's what goes through cell phone, landline, email, however you register. And for those that can't be reached, or in addition to those that have been reached, we do what we call door knocks, where law enforcement's going out there and doing...
Knocking on doors?
Knocking on doors.
Ooh.
Or, you know, they're using their high-low siren. It's kind of that European-style siren.
Oh, like the ee-ah, kind of thing?
Yeah, it's...
I know, it's more sophisticated than that.
A little bit more sophisticated.
I would probably attract animals instead of scatter them.
Yeah, I'd demonstrate it for you, but no one wants to hear that.
No, we'd have a lot of people swerving, wondering what was behind them.
Yeah.
But okay, so the European model, and that is a company with a bullhorn or some kind of something to go with it, or is that part of the notification that they get in advance? If you hear this, it's your choices are now very limited.
It can be accompanied with a bullhorn. It's actually a brand new siren that we're going to be, I believe, doing some media around today or tomorrow. So it's been pretty widely used throughout the state in the last couple of years with some of the bigger fires. And as far as tracking who stayed in, that's a little bit more difficult. You know, when we issue an evacuation order, that is a you must leave now, right?
Oh, okay. But this one's not up for debate.
We call it a mandatory evacuation. But people do have, you know, a right to stay on their property. And again, we can't force them to leave, but it is a misdemeanor to be within an evacuation order zone or a mandatory evacuation order zone.
Well, that'd probably have some teeth if it was a different time.
Yeah.
So if somebody is there, one of the things that I've always found problematic is now people are risking their lives to save the slow to come up to recognition. Is that the case, or do you risk to go in and try to save somebody who's opted to stay?
Well, I mean, number one priority is that's a difficult question.
Well, we'll let you contemplate it during the break. How's that?
Well, I can answer it if we have a few seconds.
Five.
We'll come back after.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Ryan Derby. He's the guy that runs Humboldt County OES. Ryan, the job itself or the department itself used to be freestanding, and now it's kind of under the auspices of the Sheriff's Department. I would think that makes it so much easier because you've got those direct communication lines. Instead of having to go through some filters and that kind of stuff, you call up, you know, Sergeant Bob or Lieutenant Sam. Hey, guys, what's going on? Information's easy. How do you determine what's releasable to share to the community?
So generally what's releasable is going to be things that are going to affect the public at large. So if it's something that has an imminent threat to life and safety, we want to notify the public immediately. And kind of the policy of our department is transparency. We're not trying to hide anything that we do.
But you don't want to give out the goodies too early and either endanger a situation or cause a reaction in the community that might not be warranted.
It's a delicate balancing act. We don't want to incite panic if there's not, you know, reason to notify. So if there's no imminent threat, we don't want to.
No, that's Nicolini's job out of the weather station.
We want to, you know, present the facts, present the risk, and let the residents of Humboldt County know, you know, the steps they can take to make themselves safe and what we're doing to help them with that.
in the past with some of the different events we've had, whether the floods or the earthquakes, that kind of stuff, there is a, what do they call it? Down in the basement.
Mm-hmm. We call it the bunker.
Yeah, and some of the city halls have got it. Certainly the courthouse has got that also. When you get into situations with that, or in that environment, in that culture, how do you maintain, not decorum, but how do you maintain a focus on what's going on? Because, you know, to me, I've only been in it a couple times when it was live and going. It reminds me of what my perception is of the New York Stock Exchange and the commodities down in the pit. Everybody yelling, everybody doing. It seems to flow, but I couldn't tell you how in the world that happens. How does that happen?
So myself and my OES staff work down in the bunker, which is a civil defense fallout shelter from the 1960s. We work there every single day. And then when we activate, OES essentially becomes what we call the EOC, or the Emergency Operations Center, where we're pulling in staff with subject matter expertise or in different departments to have, you know, their singular focus. And what that does is kind of broadens our outreach and our intake of information. So oftentimes, you know, we're in a windowless bunker, right? The incident's out in the field, maybe 30 miles, 40 miles away from us. So the way that we get information is through, you know, phone calls, right? Or routine briefings and meetings with the incident management team out in the field. So sometimes our information is a little bit delayed from what's actually happening, but we have to constantly be in tune, you know, with our contacts on the ground to receive that information and make decisions based on it.
I would think that the delay is a healthy thing. You know, I think a lot of folks will react and go, oh, gee, I shouldn't have. You know, if they were taking 15 seconds, perhaps that would have been enough time to reflect it and do something slightly different. And yet at the same time, you have this expectation, internal as well as external expectation. As soon as you get it, boy, that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you determine when the time is right to get the information out? Is it a second source, you know, vetting it, so to speak? Do you go with it? I would imagine if Sheriff Billy gave you a call, you're probably not going to wait for somebody else to vet the information. Certain folks, certain positions have maybe not the need to be vetted. Others do. I mean, how do you know what to go with and when to go with it?
So a lot of it depends on source, right? If we're getting information from social media, that may not be the most reliable source.
Really? You know, that axiom about it on the internet, it must be true, is not?
It is not.
Oh.
So we generally, we're going to get information from what we call our agency representative out in the field. We're going to get information from the incident commander out in the field or their operations chief. And those are verified sources, right?
Official sources most of us, yeah, okay.
And when it comes into the EOC, you know, kind of having that diversity of specialities or diversity of departments creates this kind of brain center, if you will, right? We can bounce ideas off each other, talk about contingency plans, talk about any gaps in planning, and then come up with a plan of action.
Well, and you got different levels of experience there, too, so you might have a couple of long tooths to be able to say, well, you know, in 94, that does not feel right. In 74, we did this, or this is what we ran into, or that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the social media, and for many folks, that has proven to be problematic. Rather than additional information sources, it becomes something that just muddles things up, or worse yet, it's totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's somebody's interpretation of a situation that might have a single impression, but they didn't see it in it at a larger level to be able to really see what was going on or to understand what was going on. How much of your job in that kind of scenario is stomping out the fires?
Proverbial fires.
I think everybody's following that analogy, but it was timely for what we're dealing with today. Yeah, managing misinformation or responding, reacting to it.
I mean, it's a constant thing. So every time we have an incident, we have a public information officer who's responsible for checking on those things, verifying, vetting, and correcting.
And we'll talk about that when we come back. It's 8:30.
happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Ryan Derby from the Office of Emergency Services. The basement. The dungeon. That sounds more sexy than the bunker.
I guess so.
Yeah, you have to wear your little pith helmet and go in there. I don't think they make them in our size. What do you think?
I actually got one on top of my desk.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, one of the old Civil Defense air raid war.
Has that been handed down?
It's been passed down from emergency manager to emergency manager for decades.
Oh, gee. How do you know when it's too much? That maybe, you know, we need to hold stuff back. You know, talk to some folks in law enforcement, and I guess you are one.
By definition. I'm not a deputy.
You just get the wardrobe?
I just get to wear the green pants and the black polo.
Okay, so non-sworn.
Yeah.
But a lot of that stuff comes across your desk. You're, oh, gee, really? Oh, okay. So you got the information. What is shareable? What isn't shareable? How do you vet it? Not the authenticity, but whether or not it should be shared.
So we have kind of a saying down in my office that we take information, we turn it into intelligence, right? And if it's not intelligence or intelligent, it's not going to go out. Because we can't send out information that's unvetted or untrue. So generally speaking, you know, going back to the idea of just putting out information and being completely I'm at a loss for words here.
Just a straight conduit.
We're a conduit for information, but that information has to be accurate and it has to be relevant to the situation that we're speaking on. I don't know that answers your question.
You got in the neighborhood.
So going back to kind of the social media question that we talked about earlier, you see a lot of chatter on social media. Some of it may be true, some of it's not.
Do you even monitor that stuff?
We monitor it constantly. So our public information officers, they're monitoring social media. They're vetting that information with our sources in the field, and then they're putting out what's accurate and what's true.
Responses to it, or just as if it wasn't there, but you kind of know that there's that subcurrent?
Not always responses. Sometimes if it's overtly wrong, you know, we'll do a corrected statement.
Bridge out in Ferndale. No, the bridge isn't out in Ferndale.
Yeah, so we'll do stuff, what's called counter messaging or
I bet that's not quite the phraseology you use downstairs.
we'll keep that phraseology
perhaps
downstairs.
Yes. Now you've been in there for a little bit of time. You haven't dealt with a major. To me, a major is like a 7+ earthquake. Okay. Floods that are knocking out bridges, things like that, that, you know, we've had historically, but haven't had lately. How do you anticipate? I mean, you can't practice those things, but how do you anticipate or role play those types of scenarios where, okay, you know that there's going to be some impacts, but you're really not sure what they are?
Mm-hmm. So in what we call clear skies, you know, in the absence of an incident, our job in OES is to plan and prepare and train and drill. So we have plans in place, contingency plans for what we call all hazards scenarios, and then we have separate contingency plans for different hazard types, earthquake, fire, flood, tsunami.
The stuff we would normally think of.
Mm-hmm. And what we do is we train our staff, and then we set up tabletop exercises. Then we'll do a functional exercise and then a full-scale exercise. So it's kind of this crawl, walk, run pattern of training where first we'll sit down and talk about it around a table, do kind of a gap assessment, what we may need, and then we put that to practice with a functional and a full-scale. But the best plan you could ever write is never going to account for every situation that you encounter.
Oh, yeah. You don't know what tower, say, communication tower goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we've got, we're okay here, here, and here. Whoops, it's that one. Okay. One of the things that I found intriguing in the generators, Y2K, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, panic. I know that probably predates you, so let's not bring up that age thing. But there was a discussion, and we're hard and we're ready. We got generators all over the place. We are locked and loaded and da-da-da. Okay, made it through there. What happened to all those generators? Any idea? Nobody seems to know. They must have all just vaporized.
So I do know, this is not,
yeah, no, I
not
know it's
Y2K,
hearsay.
But
yeah.
Since the PSPS events in 2019, the county's done, you know, a large purchase of new generators. We've got a new one up on the courthouse. We're purchasing around 90 for the school districts. And their generators are pretty commonplace now with the PSPS funding. And, you know, with the Humboldt Bay Generation Station coming online a year or so ago, it's...
That kind of makes us immune, at least around the Bay, right?
Well, yes and no. If the Bay Area or areas that the generating station can service are under fire threat or PSPS threat, then the
if the nuclear plant is under fire threat, we're all out of here anyway. Oh, okay, you got to take a phone call. Great, we'll take a break. It's 8:42.
Hey, folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly an American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Ryan Derby. Ryan, what are some of the big challenges you've got going on now? Obviously, the fire could become a significant one for you. Hopefully, the guys that wear the red are out and able to handle most of the stuff. But what are you looking at now? Is it what is or what might be?
So just a brief update on the fire. Last night it was reported that it's at 34% containment, largely along that 299 corridor. They're working along the western side of the fire today. I'd give reference point, but it's a lot of Forest Service roads that people won't be familiar with.
Or if you say the river, well, okay, is it the North Fork or the South Fork of the Main?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, I'm with you.
So it was a little over 2,000 acres. It's around 34% contained. And they're starting to cut some dozer lines on the north, just south of Willow Creek proper. So it's looking really good. We had our briefing this morning at 7 a.m., and the fire management team seemed pretty confident that they're going to get a good handle on this. So,
and that's Forest Service guys that are working that one?
It's a combination.
It's a combo.
Yeah, so there's quite a few. Right now, California Incident Management Team 5 is the IMT is what we call it.
Lead dog.
Yeah, they're the ones that are managing the fire, and then we have, you know, the Knob Fire is also called Branch 50, and that's being run right now with, you know, multiple fire agencies. So,
and the big boy, that seems to be getting closer and closer. So at least 299 will stay open. That's a couple balls in the air there, huh? Yeah.
So I believe it's still at one-way controlled traffic along 299 near Willow Creek, but so far there has not been a hard closure over here.
Yeah, yeah. Trinity County's been having to deal with that. Now, are you guys using CHP also to help out with the traffic situation?
CHP has been heavily involved. They went on what's called tactical alert to pull in some more officers out there, staffing roadblocks. And
it's a perfect weekend for that, too. Paul sent out a press release yesterday about maximum enforcement. I'm thinking, okay, we're going to be enforcing the highway here first, 299, and then some of the other stuff that they routinely will do. How many different agencies can be involved?
Can be involved?
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking 100 might not be too outlandish a number.
No, not at all. Right now, I don't remember the exact number of personnel assigned to the fire, but we have cooperators meetings every morning where there's 126 some odd people who are involved in those updates, which probably represents around 80 different agencies.
And this is for a small, relatively small incident.
So the incident management team that's managing the Knob Fire is also managing the Monument. So they're providing updates on both.
Oh, that's convenient.
It is.
Not convenient. I mean, it may not be the best word to use, but it's efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, boy. Are you tracking any of this stuff or involved with any of this stuff around the virus? Is that... My thought is that the OES is short-term stuff rather than prolonged stuff. Is that fair or accurate?
So OES was kind of one of the lead agencies for COVID-19. I was the director of the COVID EOC from March of 2020 to June of 2021. So about 15 some odd months. And now we still stay in regular contact. We have policy meetings every other week. We're not involved in the day-to-day so much, but we do kind of keep up to date on what's happening. And
now, with something like that, where you've got federal, you've got state, you've got regional, you've got local, everybody influencing, mm-hmm. I guess, or having a piece of the action, so to speak, how do you coordinate all that stuff? Because I mean, the feds are certainly going to have a different – well, okay, their car's a lot bigger than what your car's going to be. You know, who's driving this thing? Was it another situation of managing information rather than doing more than that? Or how did that play out? Because that's got to be something that's fairly unique.
So I can speak to what happened during my tenure in the EOC for COVID. It was challenging because you've got guidelines from the federal government, you have guidelines from the state, and then you have local guidelines, right? And it's a matter of keeping track of all the changes that are happening, which seemed constant, and making decisions that are right for Humboldt County that fall within those parameters. So it's a matter of, you know, what are we legally obligated to do, and what's the best fit to keep Humboldt County residents safe.
And I would think that there was a certain degree of frustration, because those aren't all necessarily answered with the same response, those challenges, those questions, those situations. Were you able to sleep at night, or did you get you ramped up?
I mean, at some point you just get so tired that you don't have a problem sleeping. But the biggest challenge was, you know, we'd get new guidelines at Friday at 4 o'clock, right? And then we have to essentially interpret those and then put out information for the public. And with some of the changes, you want to make sure that you have adequate time for businesses to react.
The implementation phase, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that was more of the challenging piece, was getting the timing of, okay, we've received this guideline, we need to implement it, but we need to give adequate time for public information sharing.
And there's no truth to the rumor you had a piece of the plexiglass industry?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
Clear that one up before it starts any... Well, hopefully the next couple weeks will be less and less work and more and more practice. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Nice to see you.
Thanks, man.
See everybody tomorrow.